The Voice of the Silence. The Voice of the Silence being chosen fragments from the Book of the Golden Precepts for the daily use of Lanuz disciples. Translated and annotated by H.B.B. A verbatim reproduction of the original edition of 1889. Published by Theosophical University Press, P.O. Bin C., Pasadena, California, 91109, 1971. Reprinted in the Netherlands. Read in October 1991. Table of Contents. Preface. Fragment 1. The Voice of the Silence. Fragment 2. The Two Paths. Fragment 3. The Seven Portals. Glossary. Preface. The following pages are derived from the Book of the Golden Precepts, one of the works put into the hands of mystic students in the East. The knowledge of them is obligatory in that school, the teachings of which are accepted by many theosophists. Therefore, as I know many of these precepts by heart, the work of translating has been a relatively easy task for me. It is well known that, in India, the methods of psychic development differ with the gurus, that is, teachers or masters, not only because of their belonging to different schools of philosophy, of which there are six, but because every guru has his own system, which he generally keeps very secret. But beyond the Himalayas, the method in the esoteric schools does not differ, unless the guru is simply a lama, but little more learned than those he teaches. The work from which I here translate forms part of the same series as that from which the stanzas of the Book of Zion were taken, on which the secret doctrine is based. Together with the great mystic work called Paramartha, which, the legend of Nagarjuna tells us, was delivered to the great Arhat by the Nagas, or serpents, in truth a name given to the ancient initiates, the Book of the Golden Precepts claims the same origin. Yet its maxims and ideas, however noble and original, are often found under different forms in Sanskrit works, such as the Dhyaneshwari, that superb mystic treatise in which Krishna describes to Arjuna in glowing colors the condition of a fully illumined yogi, and again in certain Upanishads. This is but natural, since most, if not all, of the great Arhats, the first followers of Gautama Buddha, were Hindus and Aryans, not Mongolians, especially those who immigrated into Tibet. The works left by Arya Sangha alone are very numerous. The original precepts are engraved on thin oblong squares, copies very often on discs. These discs, or plates, are generally preserved on the altars of the temples attached to centers where the so-called contemplative, or Mahayana, Yogacharya schools are established. They are written variously, sometimes in Tibetan, but mostly in ideographs. The sacerdotal language, Sinsar, besides an alphabet of its own, may be rendered in several modes of writing in cipher characters, which partake more of the nature of ideographs than of syllables. Another method, Lug in Tibetan, is to use the numerals and colors, each of which corresponds to a letter of the Tibetan alphabet, 30 simple and 74 compound letters, thus forming a complete cryptographic alphabet. When the ideographs are used, there is a definite mode of reading the text, as in this case the symbols and signs used in astrology, namely the 12 zodiacal animals and the 7 primary colors, each a triplet in shade, that is, the light, the primary, and the dark, stand for the 33 letters of the simple alphabet, for words and sentences. For in this method, the 12 animals, 5 times repeated and coupled with the 5 elements and the 7 colors, furnish a whole alphabet composed of 60 sacred letters and 12 signs. A sign placed at the beginning of the text determines whether the reader has to spell it according to the Indian mode, when every word is simply a Sanskrit adaptation, or according to the Chinese principle of reading the ideographs. The easiest way, however, is that which allows the reader to use no special or any language he likes, as the signs and symbols were, like the Arabian numerals or figures, common and international property among initiated mystics and their followers. The same peculiarity is characteristic of one of the Chinese modes of writing, which can be read with equal felicity by anyone acquainted with the character. For instance, a Japanese can read it in his own language as readily as a Chinaman in his. The Book of the Golden Precepts, some of which are pre-Buddhistic while others belong to a later date, contain about 90 distinct little treatises. Of these I have learnt 39 by heart years ago. To translate the rest, I should have to resort to notes scattered among too large number of papers and memoranda collected for the last 20 years and never put in order, to make of it, by any means, an easy task. Nor could they be all translated and given to a world too selfish and too much attracted to the objects of sense to be in any way prepared to receive such exalted ethics in the right spirit. For unless a man perseveres seriously in the pursuit of self-knowledge, he will never lend a willing ear to advice of this nature. And yet such ethics fill volumes upon volumes in Eastern literature, especially in the Upanishads. "Kill out all desire of life," says Krishna to Arjuna. That desire lingers only in the body, the vehicle of the embodied self, not in the self, all caps, which is eternal and indestructible, which kills not, nor is it killed. Kill out sensation, teaches Sutta Nipata. Look alike upon pleasure and pain, gain and loss, victory and defeat. Again, seek shelter in the eternal alone. Destroy the sense of separateness, repeats Krishna under every form. The mind, or manas, which follows the rambling senses, makes the soul, buddhi, as helpless as the boat which the winds lead astray upon the waters. Therefore it has been thought better to make a judicious selection only from those treatises which will best suit the few real mystics in the Theosophical Society, and which are sure to answer their needs. It is only these who will appreciate these words of Krishna Christos, the higher self. Quoting from the Bhagavad Gita, "Sages do not grieve for the living nor the dead. Never did I not exist, nor you, nor these rulers of men, nor will any one of us ever hereafter cease to be." End quote. In this translation, I have done my best to preserve the poetical beauty of the language and imagery which characterized the original. How far this effort has been successful is for the reader to judge. H.P.B.